Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Questions by the Sages, text number 14. Word meanings, apanaha, being entangled, sang sritin, in the hurdle of birth and death, ghoram, too complicated, yet what nama, the absolute name, vivashaha, unconsciously, grinan, chanting, tata, from that, sadhya, at once, vimucheta, gets freedom, yet that which bibhati fears, swayam, personally, bhayam, fear itself. Apana samsritim goram, yannama vivasho grinan, tata sadyo vimucheta, yad bibheti swayam bhayam, apana sanskritim goram, yannama vivasho grinan, tata sadyo vimucheta, yad bibheti swayam bhayam, apanna sanskritim gauram, yannama vivasho grinan, tata sadyo vimucheta, yad bibheti swayam bhayam.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna. which is feared by fear personified. Maybe we could all say that together. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even consciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. I know as soon as I read that, I thought, oh, there's hope. But I'm going to explain a little bit more about what that means, because, of course, the sages, they're speaking to greatly learned persons, and Prabhupada's going to give us a purport that help us see into that. Purport. Vasudeva, or Lord Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, is the supreme controller of everything. Now, if you've noticed, that word absolute has been put in there a couple times, in the word for word, nama, the absolute name. And here, because this is a pivot, this is one of the essential aspects of this point. And Prabhupada also, because usually he just says the supreme personality of Godhead. Here it's absolute personality of Godhead, and that's the first sentence of the purport. There is no one in creation who is not afraid of the rage of the Almighty. Okay. Now we're getting into the context. So because this fear, I suppose every one of us has experienced it for one thing or another. There's fear. And fear personified, that's an interesting concept to think that how personification of fear can be there. We generally don't think of it as a person. And when I thought about fear personified, I'll just share a thought that I had with that. I was trying to think of how fear personified could be afraid of Krishna. And I was thinking the first rule, or the first law of existence, is self-preservation. That one wants to continue to exist. It's the nature of the soul, so we naturally always want to continue to exist. So fear personified, sometimes you could understand it as darkness. And darkness will definitely have a problem with the sun. It can't exist simultaneously. So this fear, we can recall 11.237 talks about fear, and then Srila Prabhupada gives a translation of that in Majjha 20.119. Maybe I should just read that real quick. I'll get back to that too. That this Majjha 20, which is what's it? Majjha 20, Sanatana Goswami. And Prabhupada gives a very nice translation to that verse there. My preferred one. And it starts off with bhayam, which is fear. It says, when a living entity is attracted by the material energy, which is separate from Krishna, he is overpowered by fear, because he is separated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the material energy. His conception of life is reversed. In other words, instead of being the eternal servant of Krishna, he becomes Krishna's competitor. This is called viparyayo smita. To nullify this mistake, one who has actually learned and advanced worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his spiritual master, worshipful deity, and source of life. He thus worships the Lord by the process of unalloyed devotional service. So this point here is how fear only exists without Krishna. So here it's saying when one chants the holy name, fear personified is afraid because it can't exist in that environment. So that was one thing that I noticed. And because I'm speaking, I should say, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Yena Anjana Salakaya Chaksu Militanyena Tajmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jayatam Sarito Pangur Mamamanda Matirgati Matsarva Slapatam Bojo Radha Madana Mohano. So, of course, Radha Madan Mohan, that's Sambandha, and it's also the Guru is Krishna. And those who represent Krishna, they're also Guru. They're non-different Saksatati Twaina because they're representing, like the ambassador represents the king or the government. And he's given the same respect. So the spiritual master, specifically the one who initiates, he's also Madan Mohan. That's the representative of Madan Mohan. So. And of course we say Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya. So this Prastaya, we know that Prabhupada is very dear to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita it mentions that who's the most dear? The dear is the one who's preaching. So in the second one of those mantras, it's Gauravani Pracharane. So how that relates is that the Nam Diksha, that gives us initiation to chant the holy name. Now this holy name here specifically, where it says, the living beings entangled in the meshes of birth and death, complicated meshes of birth and death. We can spend a minute on that too. But I'm going to finish the purport. There is no one in creation who is not afraid of the rage of the Almighty. Great asuras like Ravana, Aranyakashipu, Kamsa, and others who were very powerful living entities were all killed by the personality of Godhead. And we can remember Prahlad, when he was talking with Lord Nisringadev, he mentioned how his father was so powerful, but yet he's been killed within a second, and he had everything. So what is the value of getting everything? It's going to be taken away. Yeah, for a young child, he had very good logic there. He says, why endeavor for something that's temporary? Because you're going to lose it. So here we see how Prabhupada points out how the progression of his purport. He's a supreme controller. So we also use the term sarvakarna karnam, that Krishna is the cause of all causes. And understanding that point, that everything is being arranged specifically with a purpose. Krishna doesn't do anything whimsically. So there's actually a purpose behind everything. And here, this particular verse is also kind of like a continuation of text, was it 9, where it says, please therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you ascertain to be the absolute and the ultimate good for the people in general. So along that same line, now they're saying you chant the holy name because even fear is afraid of that. And those that are involved, entangled. We can spend a moment on that word, entangled. Let's see, I guess a net. Nets entangle you. You can't just free yourself from a net or a network. So we're very much integrated into this material life. In fact, that's one of the goals in the Vedic culture was how to disassociate yourself. And these things, even though they're accepted or presented to us as a means of happiness, most of the time, at least in the Vedic culture, partway through your life, you recognize that it doesn't exactly work. I thought I was getting one thing, and I got just the opposite. That's the way that it's generally explained. But in the beginning, Prabhupada explains there's different types of intelligence. The first class intelligence, he can understand that just by hearing. But of course, Tamar gave a nice class on Manda Sumanda. So this Manda, this means that we don't have the intelligence. It's perverse. We don't have the longevity. Sometimes it says you have to learn from other people's mistakes because we're not going to live long enough to learn from all the mistakes we're going to make. We're going to make so many mistakes. So we have to be able to learn from other people's mistakes. And that, it comes from hearing. So, all right, I'm going to continue on here. So we're following Prabhupada's purport here, that even the great, powerful, tremendously powerful personalities that were materialists, they were all killed. And the almighty Vasudeva has empowered his name with the powers of his personal self. So here's Prabhupada's directing us through the purport back to the absolute nature of Krishna and his name. The whole internal potency has this unique feature of being absolute. It's non-different, which is, takes some time. We probably all remember how Prabhupada said, you can say water, 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 but you can't quench your thirst, because the word water and the substance water are two different things. But in the spiritual world, they're the same. And we've heard that, how the substance is the same. So Krishna, his devotees, the spiritual world, are all on the same absolute platform. So that's a wonderful understanding to develop, because in that way one can stay fixed on the absolute. Sattvam param dhimahi. We've noticed how the Bhagavad Gita ends with the Sarvadhamma Pratyaja, that one should give up all these forms of and just surrender. And what will happen if you do? He says, I'll relieve you from all your reactions. And then he says, different ways it's translated, don't hesitate, don't fear, do not fear. So since fear is part of this, and how one chants and his fear goes away, it's mentioned. Of course, the word that catches us in this translation is unconsciously. We say, oh, okay. So after I'm finished reading the purport, we're going to go into what is this unconsciously? Because unconscious is used in different ways. And a lot of times we meet it like, when you're asleep, he's unconscious. But you can also be awake and unconscious, which most of us experience in class. But what is this unconscious is actually, it's missing the sambandha jnana, or sometimes it's referred to in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada would say, first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So in that context, we can understand that while I'm awake, but yet he's referring to another state or another usage of the word conscious. First become conscious, then you become Krishna conscious. So the way I've noticed it is generally the mode of goodness. Nasta prayeshu adbhadreshu nityam bhagavata seva. That when you start inquiring, atato brahma jignas, you start to revive your consciousness. So you become conscious, and in the mode of goodness, it's almost. We say almost to nil because the mode of goodness isn't steady. It gets contaminated by passionate ignorance. And we've probably all experienced that. Sometimes they're talking about the two wolves that are sitting on the shoulders, or one's goodness and the other one is passion and ignorance, and they give us different advice, which one gets stronger, the one that you feed. So there's the idea of making good choices in your life. All right, I'm going to read some more. All right. And the Almighty Vasudeva has empowered his name with the powers of his personal self. Who knows the Shikshastika that says that same thing? Your holy name alone can render all benediction upon. Therefore, you have hundreds of millions of names like Krishna Govinda, in which you have invested all of your potencies. And there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. Okay, we're going to talk about those hard and fast rules in a minute. Perhaps. Okay, everything is related to him. So there's a back to the Sarvakarna Karnam, that the cause of all causes, everything is related to him. And that's also called the truth. Etavadevajignatvam. If you want to know the truth, you have to relate it back to him. And everything has its identity in him. Okay, so if you really want to understand what something is, it has to be connected to Krishna. And you can see there's actually quite a mystery involved with that one, which is like the 2935 verse, the nutshell verse that says, I'm in it and I'm not in it. So when you connect it to Krishna in devotional service, he's in it. But if you, from him comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. He also has the potency that if you don't want to love Krishna, back to the fear verse, when you see something separate from Krishna, he gives you that option, which is his mercy. Sometimes Maya is also called mercy. All right, so everything is related to him, and everything has its identity in him. It is stated herein that the name of Krishna is feared even by fear personified. This indicates that the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. Therefore, so Prabhupada gives us a way to connect that. Therefore, the name of Krishna is as powerful as Lord Krishna himself. There is no difference at all. We had a little discussion on that yesterday, that one realizes that that becomes practical at a state of affection called bhava, that one sees there's no difference between Krishna and his name. We may say it, but we're in an evolving process of purifying our consciousness and developing our affection. Sometimes I notice, because I have a tendency towards just understanding, not so much doing devotional service, but I try to understand it, that gyan, which is generally how it's expressed, it's arrogant, and it's inexpensive compared to bhakti. So it's not very hard to get, now to be able to repeat this information. So I just, for myself, sometimes I say that I'm just arrogant and a cheap, get a couple verses just for honor and things like that, and how it serves pride. But the first knowledge, actually, of real bhakti knowledge is humility, because one's recognizing that this is all Krishna. I remember one time I was visiting Vaisheshika's temple on Balaram's appearance day, and there was a lot of tech-type people there. Amazing how well everything is organized. And I was thinking about Balaram because it was his appearance day, and I said that he's like the original spiritual master. All the Shastric knowledge belongs to him. So because they were techies, they had this thing called intellectual property software. You can agree to use it, but it's never yours. You can't change it. All you can do is use it. And if you reverse engineer it, or you do something else with, you say, thinking it's yours, you're guilty of a copyright infringement, which is in certain fields, this is a bad thing to do. And so I was thinking, if one doesn't acknowledge how Krishna is the source, and all this knowledge is coming from Krishna, if we want to, like Prabhupada would talk about all the people who translate Bhagavad Gita for a different purpose, not as it is, as they would like it to be, they're all guilty of this copyright infringement. And the penalty that one gets on the subtle platform is pride. So that's the punishment here, because pride takes away the rust of being with Krishna. One can't have that. We know that Krishna doesn't like it. There's many examples in different pastimes that even if the gopis become a little bit proud, all of a sudden Krishna disappears to realign all the correct rasa. So, continuing on. Therefore, the name of Krishna is as powerful as Lord Krishna himself. There is no difference at all. Anyone, therefore, can take advantage of the holy name of Lord Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, even in the midst of the greatest dangers. The transcendental name of Krishna, even though uttered unconsciously or by force of circumstances, can help one obtain freedom from the hurdle of birth and death. So, 2 points that I'd like to make from here is this birth and death. This is a very serious problem for the conditioned soul. Prabhupada would say it's so troublesome. Most of us by now have moved. Is there anyone who hasn't moved yet? You know, you're in one house for some time and then you have to move to another apartment, another house. And Prabhupada would say it's very troublesome. Very troublesome. So no matter what you do in this life, you're going to be kicked out. Get out. You're kicked out of your house, of your body. Evicted. Yes, which is certainly uncomfortable to do that. So he said, we should stop this problem of birth and death. So Krishna consciousness is transcendental, and it actually just groups all the, how did it write it, complicated, entangled in its complicated meshes. Trying to just say, and in some of the other earlier translations, and the other ones from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's horrifying that this cycle of birth and death, sometimes we take it in just as another word in a sentence. But if you take it for a minute and get involved with, we're in a cycle of death, we're on death row, we could die at any time, we're being controlled by enemies that are not going to be helping us, to, like the senses. Sometimes we want to go external and think there's someone else controlling me that's not my friend. But even our own senses. So this humility is a type of a prayer that I victimized myself and by my sense gratification. I'm susceptible to when Maya is telling me that you'll be happy by this. What was it, Benjamin Franklin? I think he's the one who says you can't cheat an honest person. You know, so of course everybody gets cheated and cheated because we're not honest in this age. But the idea is that when one agrees to sense gratification, it eclipses his knowledge. 262-263 Bhagavad. By contemplating the object of the senses, and it runs through the, I call it an assembly belt, conveyor belt. It just drops you off at the next level that you start thinking, yes, maybe this would be enjoyable. And then you think, oh, I'd like to possess it. I and mine come into it. And then somehow or other, it just didn't work out. You get upset. But materialists will always say, well, first you don't succeed, samsara. Try again and again, 8,400,000 ways. You'll do it, just keep trying. But the next stage is called jnana, where you start to recognize this is never going to work. Something else is going on here. What is the cause of all causes? Atato Brahma Jignas. And then your intelligence, you start to revive, you start to wake up. And I was thinking of, there's a verse that has this cycle of birth and death in it. And we say it every day, or at least it's part of our sadhana to come to the sadhya. There's the goal of life, prema pumartha maha. Lord Chaitanya says there's a goal, and he says there's a process to obtain the goal. That's called sadhana. So sadhana is that which is going to deliver prema. So one of the, that was from Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, starts off, what is the sadhya? What is the goal of life and how do you obtain it? So here's the prayer that we say. Who knows which prayer it is that we say every day? Yeah, there you go. Samsara of material existence, Dava Anala, by the forest fire, Lidha, afflicted Loka, the people. So it says the spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy. Just as a cloud pours water on a forest fire to extinguish it, so the spiritual master delivers the materially afflicted world by extinguishing the blazing fire of material existence. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master who has an ocean of auspicious qualities. So sometimes we say it regularly, hopefully, and we don't always, because it just goes to the next one right away, to have that awareness in the morning to reflect on the great good fortune. And then that reminded me of a verse in Anchalila 17:126. So a little Lord Chaitanya's program, because it's the Gauravani Parcha. And in this verse, I gotta go back one. There it is. 17:126. This is the Qazi speaking. And he says, for so long you did not follow regulated principles of the Hindu religion, but now you are following them with great enthusiasm. May I know by whose strength you are doing so. So this verse is talking about how the holy name can get you out of birth and death. I'll read the verse again. It says, living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So this means, this is 5,000 years old, this statement. But where do we find in the histories where this mass sankirtan was going on? We don't find it. This seems like something from that Lord Chaitanya's disciples would say. But here are the sages of Namisharanya. They're saying this. So by whose strength is this happening? So this is in modern times. We see Lord Chaitanya in India. But more recent times, we see Srila Prabhupada in every town and village has brought the chanting of Hare Krishna. And it's on his strength. So that connection between the spiritual master has to be kept vibrant. When we offer obeisances, it's not just a routine thing that one does as a ritual, because we can talk about the glories of the holy name with the devotees, but by offering obeisances, and then how about for the spiritual master brings you a little closer, he gives you a second initiation. And in the second initiation, even though Lord Brahma, he was initiated by the Gayatri. When we're second initiated, we're given the Gayatri. It's kind of interesting because Lord Brahma, that was his initiation, was by the Gayatri mantras, how he became initiated, twice born. It's at 529, is it, of Brahma Samhita? So in the Gayatri that Srila Prabhupada has given us, the second one is offering obeisances to the spiritual master. So I was just recently traveling, and sadhana gets different when you're not in a regulated situation. So when I was chanting my Gayatri, by his mercy, still able to do that, I was thinking, what's it mean to be a disciple? Because I'm with basically all non-devotees everywhere, except even when we would go out on Sankirtan, you're still surrounded by the non-devotees. So I was thinking, I have a different lifestyle. We have generally, the living entity is conducted by the chariot, mana retainer, the chariot of the mind is carrying us from one body to another body. But yet when we take initiation from a spiritual master, we're giving that power of attorney. You know, power of attorney, most of us are getting old enough that we understand the good and the bad things about those. Some people won't give them to their children because their children will just take everything away from them. And that's a reoccurring theme that happens. He's getting seen. He doesn't need it anymore. I'll transfer everything into my name. So some parents, they won't give power of attorney to their children. But we give power of attorney to Srila Prabhupada when we offer our obeisances. Disciple, discipline, those two go together. And he has the sword of knowledge, which is sharpened, because here it talks about the living entities are entangled in a complicated meshes of birth and death. So in other words for that is the Riya Granthi, a labyrinth knot in the heart. And it says that one cannot untie it. It's too complicated to untie it, but you can cut through it. And the sadhu is one who cuts through this knot of attachments, different types of... We're practical, so we yuktaize everything in Krishna service. We try to engage everything in Krishna service. But we know that conditioned soul has four defects. Do you remember the four defects? You know the four defects? Come on. What's one of them? It went the nail right on the head. Okay. The cheating propensity. Now, sometimes these four defects are put in order. They're all connected. And the senses are imperfect. So you can't really get absolute knowledge through the materially contaminated senses. So that's because they're illusion. You know, you're in the illusion of identifying the I and mine. So that you have your senses are imperfect and you're an illusion. So by accepting the senses as a source of knowledge, that's a mistake. And if you repeat that information with enthusiasm, yes, I know this, then you're the cheater. So it's sometimes nice to put them in order. It's all based on the bodily conception of life, that the senses, they're imperfect. As soon as you accept that, then you need to have another source of guidance in this life besides the mind, who's the spokesman for the senses, under the guise that you'll be happy by sense gratification. So we take apart all those things. So, okay, what I mentioned earlier, I'm going to try to get to, was unconsciously. Who's the example that is used in the Bhagavatam of someone who unconsciously chanted Hare Krishna and then very shortly Ajama. The second syllable is the long syllable, it's not Ajama. Ajamyo. Push girl, correct. Okay, so I'm going to read a couple things from the Bhagavatam that also, I mean, this is one of the most illuminating aspects of the holy name, because before that time, do you remember how it got to this story? Was Maharaj Parikshit had seen or understood about hell, the end of the fifth canto. And he said, how? Because of Vaishnav's heart, he doesn't like to see anybody suffer. He says, how can we avoid going to hell? You know, 240, it says there's no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So right now we have our mind and we have so much information coming from it. But imagine when you're seeing the Yamadutas. That is one scary time. All that stuff that they told us in the church and in the synagogues and in the Hare Krishnas about hell. It's real. At that time, if you talk to hospice nurses, they have a thing that I talked to one or two, where they talk about thrashing. You know what thrashing is? Thrashing, it's when the person, he's just getting ready to leave his body, he starts very aggressively moving side to side, up and down. He's just like, thrashing. Okay. He's just moving all around and they don't understand what's happening. So I said, well, here in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, the Yamadutas have the ropes on him and they're pulling him out of his subtle body, and he doesn't know how to work with the subtle body. He's working with his gross body and it's jumping all around as he's being yanked out of his body. And where is he going? He's going to see Yamaraj. And from Yamaraj, Yamaraj doesn't deal with the ones that don't need to come to him. They're going to hell. And that's one scary situation. So, but Ajamil so kindly is giving us a glimpse into that, other than the movie maybe Ghost. That was Patrick Swayze, about 20 years ago or so. They had that, and I'm sure that the person who wrote that read the Bhagavatam, because they had these Yamadutas in there, scary and chained, a whole thing. And my daughter saw that when she was around 8, and she says, what was that? What's going on here? We got out the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, read through the whole thing. Of course, they present it with Hollywood flair, you know, as a love story. They don't give the final Siddhanta, but they really know how to present a point. So here in chapter 2, after they go through, Prayaschitta doesn't work. Do you remember why Prayaschitta atonement doesn't work? What's it? Because it doesn't do something. What does it not do? It doesn't take the seed of desire out of the heart. And because the desire seed is still there, we know what happens with seeds. They wait for a good opportunity and then they fructify and produce a plant that produces many more seeds. So the seed of desire has to be removed. And that can only be removed by what? The fire of ordeal and by bhakti. Bhakti has this unique absolute quality of reviving our love for Krishna. It's only by love. So in here it says, Ajamil has already atoned for all his sinful actions. Indeed, he has atoned not only for the sins performed in one life, but for those performed in millions of lives. For he helpless in a helpless condition, he chanted the holy name of the Rayan. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense, and therefore he is now pure and eligible for liberation. So when it says unconsciously, he was chanting unconsciously, meaning he was not aware of his relationship at the time of the chanting. He was chanting to indicate something else. However, it's not that he immediately went back to Godhead. There was still another step. But here it says he became eligible. You have your eligibility is there. So we know that he came out of a coma and he left right away for Hardwar, right? Where he moved into the temple and he finished the process. So Nasta Prayash Adbet Reshu. When I was growing up, we moved into the temple and everything we did was for Krishna. I mean, if you did anything, you felt something was off a little. Like I remember one time in 1972, I was in a little temple in Laguna Beach, and we were out on Sankirtan all day, so we were all just walking around. So on my way walking back, I stopped and got some ice cream. I felt so bad. How could I do that? I was just bogus eating ice cream. Nowadays, I don't think exactly the same as it, but I was a brahmacharya and it was that particular, the era that we were in. And of course, some people maintain that standard, but the weeds, they can grow and the different ideas go. I don't know if I would think the same way now as I did then, but it's like that. We're being trained, and then if you maintain it, like I was noticing, we have one orange cloth in the temple room today. Well, two, probably, if you count Prabhupada. Prime Govind is being renounced. He's living like that. And I was remembering, I'm going to look it up for him today and send it to him, that this orange, this is the color of renunciation, which means someone is giving up this material world. He's giving up his subtle body. He's giving up. So we're taking shelter. You can't be without engagement. You engage in the shelter in the activities of preaching Krishna consciousness by your example, your words, your body, your mind, life, like that. They even give you a stick with all those to remind yourself. Okay, so I've got quite a few verses, but we're pretty much out of time. That if you've forgotten that story of Ajneo, it's good to remember to read it regularly. This reading cannot be emphasized enough because you'll become enthusiastic the more that you read, and that enthusiasm will manifest that you'll want to tell somebody, you know what I just read? Even unconsciously chanting Hare Krishna, you can become liberated from birth and death. I didn't know birth and death was a problem until you mentioned it. But when you think about it, it's very serious. So there's a gravity, the depth of Krishna consciousness is so different. The death of a devotee, the death of a non-devotee can't be compared. We just read that, I was reading yesterday about Dhruva Maharaj going back to Godhead, and Prabhupada states in the purport of 4:12:30 that you can't compare it. And you know the example that he gives? Who remembers the example he gives? How you can't compare the two, even though they look the same. The cat carrying the mouse and the cat carrying the kitten. So, death is going to be coming sooner than later for most of us. And do we want to have death perceived as a cat carrying a mouse or a rat? Or would you like to feel the cat carrying you as it carries its kitten? Which one would you like? Kitten. Okay, I think we got mostly kittens in here. We don't think about how scary that is, because it happens. You see anywhere there's a cat, they carry lizards, they carry all these different things around, and you know that the other person, that other entity, is not feeling very happy about that. But if you see them carrying the kitten is my mother. So, all right. The verse again was, I can read that verse one more time. Here it is. I The living entities who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. All right, questions, comments, reflections? Oh, Dharmaraj.
Arvo, you were talking about that ice cream story, so.
Oh.
I remember when I was a Sankirtan devotee, I went out and it was really hot sun. So very thirsty, became very thirsty, and, you know, so I went up to this lake, this nice lake there, nice clean water. So like, how can I drink, you know, that, you know, because we were so strict in those days that you only drink what was offered to the deity, you know, or to the temples. So that I'm thirsty, but what should I do? So then this thought came, okay, let me make an offering of the entire lake. And then he drank the water.
I did offer the ice cream.
Okay.
I didn't eat both.
I was also thinking as you were talking about the holy name, that reflecting on my own self, that many times I chant and at least committing that, you know, offense number 8, to consider chanting Hare Krishna as one of the auspicious ritualistic activities, that I'm chanting my 16 rounds, but not with that kind of mentality of, okay, this is the mercy of my spiritual master gave me this name and Krishna gave us this opportunity, but I'm chanting because this is what, you know, this is what I do. Okay, you know, I'm a Hindu, I do this, I'm a Christian, I do this, I'm a Hare Krishna, so I do this. So even within that context, it's like, you know, it's like a wake-up call as you were speaking, so I just want to speak up aloud.
That one time, I recall an installation of the deities, and Prabhupada was talking, and he was talking that he said it with such intensity that here's Krishna. And he was, of course, in the early days, he was very concerned that we would take good care of Krishna, because Krishna is a person, to Srila Prabhupada. And he's just like you, when your children were smaller, you would maybe have a babysitter take care of them. And nowadays, they have cameras, they have different things to check on them to make sure that the child is not neglected or not treated properly, or daycares, things like that, schools. So that same way, you could see that Prabhupada had that mood that here we're in one sense babysitting. They're helpless, you have to take care of them. That's the mood, you know, to take care of the deities so nicely. So the same way Krishna Prabhupada has given us the holy name, and if we think about, just like I think it was yesterday I had mentioned about the pocket call, you know, I got an email, a text about that, somebody like that. The idea, a pocket call, you know, sometimes you get a call from somebody who didn't mean to call you. And they call them butt call, pocket call, automatic, or something like that. They connotate it differently. And when you say hello, you're happy you see the person's name, and you answer, oh, I haven't talked to you for hello, and the person's not there. You hear them in the background shuffling some papers, driving the car, having a conversation with someone else. And you kind of, you know the feeling, right? So that idea, in my Krishna consciousness, ever since Prabhupada explained how Krishna is a person, I've tried to modify my thinking so I can understand that when you have a relationship with a person, which is how you do, you have to consider the other person's feelings, how what I'm doing is going to affect the other person. If you don't, you'll probably be called insensitive. There'll be different things that'll be brought up to you that how can you do that? I know one time I did something like that when I was young, and my mother says, "I'm your mother. How could you do that?" And I didn't think about it till maybe 30 years later. And I says, "Yeah, I just didn't consider, you know, her as a person with feelings." So if we consider that Krishna is a person with feelings, then everything makes more sense in the eternal realm. And that's the problem. Atat Sri Krishna Nama Adi. You know that verse? That the material senses are blunt. That means they're not, they can't sense, they can't feel. And we're trying to develop the feelings for Krishna. So it's interesting in bhava, which is a state of feelings, that's where the holy name and Krishna are non-different. So this will happen as we become free from the material conditioning, which makes us, and like your foot falls asleep, you can't feel anything, so our soul falls asleep. And we can't feel the presence of Krishna, we can't feel our relationship with him, we ignore him, we do all kinds of stuff. So we have to, I call this world love rehab. We're here to purify our heart, to once again become unconditional in our, take the business angle out. So he had a question too. Thank you.
Question about this personified ear. Oh. And it's explained in the purport that
yes, sir.
It's Krishna.
Okay.
But the verse says that this chanting of the holy name is feared by fear personified. And if Krishna is fear personified for most people, then it's a turnoff for them.
Oh.
Well, anyway, it's like a split personality. It's
the
concept of a split personality. Krishna's fear for those who are atheistic or disinclined or unfaithful. And then Krishna is the supreme liberator. Right? So he personifies himself as fear. But this statement is that the recitation of his name is feared by he himself, if you analyze it. Could you clarify that?
Well, the way I thought Prabhupada dealt with it was to talk in it. With your first point of the same person having different moods as you surrender to him, he rewards you accordingly, is the cat and the kitten, the cat and the mouse. That it's the same person, but we relate. Just like someone once says, "I'm just killing time." So time responded and says, "No, I'm killing you. Time I am, destroyer of the world." So this time, we're not killing time, time's killing us. So even though in this context, we have to notice that, like Prabhupada would say, Krishna says he's death personified. You know, for the atheist, he comes in the form of death. Get out. So he always is existing. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that Krishna is everything, and Prabhupada pointed that out in here, he's the cause of all causes. So it behooves someone to understand Krishna's purpose. We're rebellious, at least I am, maybe not you. But and now when that rebellion comes up, I can see that it's not very intelligent. You know, it's very nearsighted. Shreya and Preya, Uttama Shreya, we had that the other day. So I'm not sure how you want me to explain something about how Krishna is fear himself, but he delegates those things to his external energy. He's everything in one sense, but he's used, just like Prabhupada, I was listening to a tape or something like that, and he was asked about, the child says, "I want to touch the fan." And the father says, don't touch the fan, it's going to hurt you. And he says, I want to touch the fan. And the father says, don't touch the fan, it's going to hurt you. So this goes on for a while, and the father sees that the son has this desire. So a friend was over, and he says, why don't you turn the fan speed down a little bit? So he turned the fan speed down, so it's just barely going around. Then he says, okay, touch the fan. And he goes, bonk, makes a noise. And the little child cries for a while. And then the father says, why don't you touch the fan again? And he said, no, I'm not going to touch that fan again. So like that, that fear, it's part of our learning. So it ultimately does have good intentions behind it. It's the short-sightedness that doesn't see it. Just like when it says one should honor their parents, it's because they have love in their instructions. And because the child is generally in prayers, he only wants short-term enjoyment, he'll get upset with good instructions. If you give a fool good instructions, they become upset. So it's similar like that. Srita D. Mooney with his hand. He has a comment or a question, maybe. Use your comment.
Well, I came at the end, so, but okay. But to some degree, we create the fear of God. You know, if you are envious of someone and you wish them ill and you want to take their place, you become fearful that they probably, you know, you're competing with them.
You know? Yeah, like so, the police. If you don't have fear of the police generally. Yeah. But if you're a crook, you do.
Yeah, so in one sense, you know, it's not like Krishna's, I have fear, you know, like you, son of a gun. You know, it's like because we're projecting this attitude towards God, we're fearful of him.
But there are some religious sects, like the Jews, they teach that you should fear God. And in the mode of goodness, when you're still contaminated, 1830, Bhagavad Gita, he says one should know what is to be feared and what is not to be feared. What is to be done and what is not to be done. That's in the mode of goodness. So there is a utility for knowing what is to be feared. I think
he can be very fearful if he wants to be.
Well, Prabhupada would say, chant in ecstasy. And he empowered that chanting when he said that. Because we see, you know, you look at the early Ratha Yatras, what they talk about, unconsciously chanting the holy name. So many, we feel such enthusiasm when we're chanting. And if you talk to different scholarly personalities who put a lot of emphasis on scholarly, they'll say, you can't be chanting in ecstasy. Ecstasy is in different states of bhava. You're still in anartha nivritti. So how is it that you could be chanting in ecstasy? So it's the special mercy. So from the ocean of mercy, you're being the fire of conditional life is being extinguished. So the next time we offer obeisances, which will probably be in about 20 seconds, we can add a little of that gratitude and affection into what we're actually being, all fear is going to be gone in our life, all anxiety, all death, all problems, everything's being removed by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our being submissive and adapting that into our heart. So she's already right. Gautamika's getting a head start. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.